Welcome, everybody, to Mormons on Mushrooms. Just a reminder that this is a storytelling podcast where we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a more fulfilling life. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health top priority. Lastly, the opinions offered by our guests don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy. Dude, we're back. Like anybody cares or missed us.
We're back. I mean, it's been a few weeks though.
So. Yeah. It actually has been kind of, I feel like I've built up stores of energy. Do you know what I'm saying?
Weird how winter you like rest in winter for a few weeks, like you can build up energy.
Yeah, man. Mindful rest. Who knew you could actually get some cool shit going on.
But it is true that this is the longest break we've taken from the podcast in 2.5 years.
I know. Like, and there's that funny thing about like inertia. Cause like, as soon as we stop and say, you know, cause we've talked about doing like seasons, like, okay, there's a season and we have a new season come out and it has X number of episodes and we have a break, but we've always just been like, well, but this is therapeutic for you and me. And whenever guests can come on, there's really just no seasonality to it. It's just like, let's do a weekly thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I have to admit that the last couple of weeks has been kind of refreshing.
It's been kind of nice not to worry about. I mean, I think I've made one Instagram post being kind of like, it was some quote. And then I said, yeah, we're still pausing.
Oh, I love it.
And so like, I haven't really even been on Instagram, which has been nice.
Man, that is nice.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you feel like a renewed human being?
I do. I'm feeling good. I mean, you know, I've been through some shit this week, so I'm feeling
Like, but you've been through some major shit this week, like major.
It's been this. That's been. But you know what? I mean, I'll talk. Well, this shit feels different than it's felt in the past, though, because normally, like, there's a heaviness that surrounds. You know, I don't know. It's like. I guess I'll just share that there was a death of someone close to me.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe in a later podcast, I'll talk more details about it, but right now is someone who's close to me passed. And normally with a death, it's like this heaviness that, you know, what I just can't shake. And it's just this awful, and that's still there, but it's with everything we've gone through in the last 2.5 years, it feels like it's a movement. It feels you feel the waves. And the waves just come and go and like feel good one moment. And then the next moment it's like, man, I just got to go sit with myself. And then, but honoring that and honoring just feeling the muck and feeling like the beauty in the muck of all of it is, you know, normally I would like avoid sad things or like trying to avoid memories of the person. But I mean, this one, I've learned a song to honor his memory. And singing that song just it helps it flow through and finding the beauty and the joy in our experiences, even if there's all the usual regret and what ifs and shock and just awfulness of it all. So other than that, I'm feeling pretty rejuvenated, man.
Well, so if I could just add, like, obviously, you know, we'll talk about this whole thing on your timetable. I don't think it's wise to talk about the too much detail just quite yet, but it's cool hearing you know you're doing a thing that I learned in therapy recently, like in my last therapy session actually, about like that self-acknowledgement kind of thing, where you know you're going through a familiar process, you know, the death of a loved one. Everyone has experienced that to some degree at some level. I mean death is undefeated. I mean, like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like that's part of life. But for you to be able to recognize, you know, like to pause and be able to be like, okay, well, here's kind of how I've done the grieving process in the past. And here are some changes that I can like self-acknowledge and see it's a really cool thing. It's hard. It's a challenge. You know, my therapist was talking about how it's a major challenge to our brains. Our brains like to keep us in the same sort of rhythms that we are used to. Like, that's why we develop habit, mm-hmm. is because our brains want us to conserve energy. So the brain will, like, you know, give us this sweet dopamine dump if we do things the way we've always done them. And we say, yeah. Oh, that's the way we've always done it. And that's the way we process grief. And that's the way we process pain. And that's how we handle, you know, solving a Sudoku or whatever the fuck it is. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I'm loving right here and now, like in this moment, as you're sort of not only self-acknowledging how you've kind of approached it from a different way, and you're allowing yourself to feel it, and you're tapping into the spirit and memory of that person, but that you're also like finding new ways to fully experience those emotions as they roll through you. I think it's so beautiful and cool. I just wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is, we've talked about this, and maybe this sounds cliche, but just the teacher that death can be of, like, there's beauty and love in the pain of all of it.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, you hate to get to the teacher part yet, because sometimes you're in it and you're like, fuck that, man. Like, there's other ways I could learn this lesson, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And there are. And, you know, I had a call with you and Tess on Monday, and you said something that I loved. And it's like, he didn't die for that. That wasn't the reason he died.
No.
But there is how I handle it, how I process it. That's me. And how I choose to honor the feelings that come up around it all. And so that's been, you know, it's just been a deal.
Gosh, it's just been, that's great.
And, you know, a couple things along the lines of it is, like, you know, there has been some beauty in the fact that, like, I've been chatting with my siblings more than I have in the last 5 years, in the last few days, you know? And it's also been interesting that it's coincided with my damp January.
Damp January.
And my preparation for ayahuasca this weekend. And so I haven't drank. Yeah, I was with you on January 1st.
Yeah.
And I haven't drank any alcohol or used any weed, consumed any weed, however you say, whatever, in all the various forms.
Yeah, dude.
Which, you know, that's only 10 days. We're talking about 11.
Still, that's a lot of days, dude.
A lot of days. And especially when you hear news like this, man, my first instinct was like, fuck.
Numb it.
Ayahuasca. Fuck damp January. I'm going to grab that bottle of rum and just pour me a few glasses, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's been interesting to sit in it sober too. And I think there's sobriety is a powerful medicine in itself. Yeah,
how are you feeling? Yeah. Do you notice some, like, is your body already responding to the sobriety?
Yeah. I feel like my skin looks better. And then also just like waking up in the mornings easier.
Yeah.
I noticed the first few days were really hard. We're like, man, especially when it's just like, look, I would love to just have a beer for dinner. I don't want to get tipsy. And that's mostly how I've been drinking lately anyway, is like, just like getting tipsy on the weekends, but like during the week, you know, just pairing the food with wine or beer.
Yeah.
But there's a, you know, but then, over the weekend, I was like, oh, you know what? I'm feeling good and I don't feel like I want a beer right now. I don't know. It's gotten easier too. And it's interesting. So it's like, even after this, I want to shift my relationship to alcohol, to weed. I don't know. We'll see how that goes, but I do love.
Yeah. It's funny. You're doing the, you're sitting in the ceremony. We talked about it on the podcast that I sat in, like a month, well, just over a month ago, I guess. And I think, who knows what happens? You know, one of the best things about these types of ceremonies is that you can go in with intentions, and you can go in with like what you hope to get out of it. And then what you least expect. Like I, you know, we talked about the nicotine thing for me. You know, I'm a month and 5 days cold turkey still of no nicotine.
Dude, we should give you like a badge for that.
Yeah. High five. The relationship with alcohol is a thing that also changed for me. I mean, like you said, we were together, you know, our families and another family with, you know, during the New Year, like doing like partying during the New Year holiday. Yeah. And I never got drunk. I mean, I had a couple of beers every day, whenever we were drinking, I had a couple of beers, but like my relationship with alcohol has changed. Like today, in fact, today is a good example. Today is a day that on a, like normally I would kind of like to get a little tuned up. Like I'd get a little bit, silly, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm fucking sober as a Lord. Like I'm like, so yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things go for you this weekend and what on the other, like, I'll see you on the other side, like what that means for you. You know, you call it a damp January. I love that.
Well, just because, yeah, you know, if someone invites me to a concert or something, like, I'm going to have a couple at that point. But, you know, it might actually turn out to be a dry January. We'll see how it goes.
Well, it also speaks to me of the whole thing about, like, you know, the arbitrary nature of being like, okay, I'm doing this period of time, like January, I'm doing a dry January. I think that there's something, you know, that's a goal. And I think that's a good thing for people to try and set out to do. But instead, I think that there's something valuable about just taking that one day at a time and being like, I'm going to be more mindful of my what I'm consuming. You know, in your case, it's booze and weed. By the way, I'm not some teetotaler here. I still am.
When I say I'm going to shift my like relationship with it, I'm still going to. I love a good beer and I love getting silly every once in a while, you know?
Yeah, dude.
I just want to do it less. And I want, you know, and it's been interesting how my intentions going into the ceremony have shifted over this last week.
Yeah. Tell me more.
So before, you know, I was working on my intentions, but meanwhile, I was also writing a paper for school, and the paper, one of the papers I wrote was, my professor had written, something about like honoring the ecology between worlds, between like our world and the imaginal world.
Nice.
And how often we enter the imaginal, like trying to fix something or trying to, for some egoic desire, you know, just like the Western man approaching nature, trying to, what, okay, now I can go, like when you learn about like how you can shift your outer world by, as above, so below, you know, he who looks within awakens and, you know, that kind of stuff. But like that we try to shift our outer circumstances for egoic purposes and we exploit the imaginal realm or the unconscious. Hmm. But I feel like I was still kind of doing it with my intention where I was like, okay, you know I want to work on my issues around money, or I want to work on like, maybe, I don't know. I was working on some different intentions. And then with everything that happened this week, I'm just kind of in the muck. And so I kind of want to approach the ceremony of like, look, I'm here to enter the unconscious and see what comes up for me and honor that realm, the imaginal realm, as its own realm, and not try to manipulate or change or force my ego into it.
Yeah, man. Wow. It's already starting to work through you a little bit, huh?
I feel it, man. And maybe that's what's helped with the sobriety is I've been more tuned into the subtle nature that the medicine will start to do now, I think. So I'm excited, man.
Gosh, that's so cool. I'm excited too. I'm also having a little bit of FOMO because, like, you know, yeah. I would love to be there with you.
I would love to have you there with me, man. I'm still hoping one day you'll just come and surprise me on Saturday or something.
It's not going to happen. Sorry. Yeah. I would love to make that surprise happen, but it's not going to happen. Yeah. So I do also want to talk about, kind of like like I said, we had a little vacation together, and you know, the being aware of some of the substances that we use or consume, or even just being like, I look at my relationship with alcohol, or also with nicotine, like, you know, doing getting off nicotine. So we were hiking and decided to do some mushrooms.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And dude, that was a fucking trip. Like we thought, once again, Mike, it's like this fucking thing cycles back around and it's like nothing changes. You know what I mean? Like
when are we going to learn, you know?
When are we going to learn? Like, we think we're these two cool fucking Joes, like going around, like tripping, having all these experiences. We thought we were just going to do a small little dose and just kind of like hike and have the time of our lives, go up and look at some petroglyphs, have, you know, be cool. Uh-huh. And dude, I was fucking tripping on that. Like, it was, and it was like reminding me of my relationship with my body. Like, it was like that whole trip was reminding me of what I consume and what I put in there. You know what I mean?
Oh, interesting. And remember, I was having a similar experience where I'm like, my hips, I'd have to go. Yeah. Like, my hips were like, I was like bursting out of my hips. I needed to go stretch them. I need to go. We had that like a gun. What do you call it? The Theragun.
Theragun, dude. I got to get me one of those things. Oh, that thing is so amazing. Yeah. Here's an ad for Theragun. If you're out there, Theragun, we hereby praise thee. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
And we'll put a discount code. No, we don't have that. Actually, I'll just go buy it. But yeah. So anyway, it was like, oh, and so I've been focusing on yoga again this week. I mean, like real, like I've done Kundalini a lot, but I've kind of not been doing a lot of yoga. And so like, yeah, like reminding you that like get back in your body. Or forcing it in the vacuum. I don't know. It was like, I realized I felt like shit probably because I'd been treating my body like shit. I don't know.
Yeah, dude. This is, it's funny. It, you know, so we haven't really, we're just kind of catching. I love how it's just like you and I catching up on things shit we did together like 3 weeks ago.
You know what I mean? You guys not catch up in the moment?
I know. It's so funny. But like, it's making me think of, you know, as we're talking about, this probably is like a little bit of a change of subject, but it's kind of coming up for me as we are talking about the way we look at things, the way we experience things, both like as a choice, like as our choice, and as the world sort of happens to us. You know,
yeah.
And it makes me, I've got a bunch to say to that sort of point. And it makes me think of, on one side, that documentary that you and I watched called This Place Rules, which I think we should talk about a little bit.
I would love to talk about that one.
and as we talk about that, I want to at some point pepper in, I've gone down this crazy sort of rabbit hole the last week or two with like, it started with me like, seeing something about St. Patrick, you know?
Oh, uh-huh. Like the St. Patrick or like St. Patrick's Day?
The St. Patrick, like the homie himself, right?
Yeah. I don't know much about the homie himself. Anything to do with leprechauns or anything or what?
Oh, Mike, we're going to talk about St. Patrick. Shit, dude, maybe we should wait and do a whole fucking St. Patrick's Day episode. But like,
people can replay it then if they want to. But
yeah, man.
We're talking about it now.
If I were to say, so let me ask you this question. If I were to say to you, like roughly, I don't want to put you on the spot here, so maybe I shouldn't ask this question.
No, just try it. Let's try it.
Like roughly, when was St. Patrick kicking around? Like when was he like chasing snakes and stuff like that?
I'm going to say 1543.
Dude, same. That's what I was going to say. This motherfucker was like 471 AD.
What? Is that long ago?
Yeah. Well, yeah. He was a Roman. Like he was like a Roman, like from the Catholic Church Roman dude. Like he was that guy.
He wasn't like a redheaded Celt from like,
No. In fact, he was Roman. And the story kind of fucking differs about how he ended up in Ireland the first time. He went to Ireland twice. So the first time it's like, oh yeah, St. Patrick was a prisoner, like he was kidnapped and taken prisoner and kept in Ireland. And then another version of it is he was like when I say kidnapped, like we're talking like full-blown pirates took him to Ireland. Do you know what I mean? And then he like escaped Ireland, became a cleric, and then went back and did all of the St. Patrick things type of deal. Do you know what I mean? Which we still have to fucking talk about that too. But like, and then the other version of it is I'm loving this story. Oh, dude,
You just stumbled on the story, or were you researching St. Patrick, or?
No. So what happened was I was talking to a friend and someone just said something that like, you know how sometimes something will, it's incongruous. And so it like sticks out in your head.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so you're like, oh, I guess I don't really know very much about St. Patrick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then I was like, well, I'd love to just, let me just see what Wikipedia, like I've never even been to the Wikipedia about Patty.
To the Wikipedia.
Yeah. To the Wikipedia. So I went there and then that took me. And then you can go down Reddit rabbit holes and you can go to YouTube videos and you can do all of the, you know, all the crazy person shit, you know, like do your own research, like get your news from the fucking internet.
Isn't that so just cool that we have all these stories at our fingertips at any moment in all these different forms?
Dude, it's honestly, that's probably, if someone were asked me to, like, if someone were to say to me, what are your hobbies? I would probably say hanging out with my friends and doing drugs, playing music, and going down internet rabbit holes where I can try to learn new shit. Like those are my main hobbies. Like, you know, people are like, oh, I'm a hiker and I'm a this and I'm a that. And I'll do all that shit too. Like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. But what I really like is like learning crazy shit on the internet. Yeah.
Or hiking and taking too many mushrooms and then going, learning shit that way too.
Dude, yeah, we were learning a lot of good stuff, huh?
We were. And when we saw those hieroglyphs too there. Those were some stories there too with the hieroglyphs.
Yeah, dude, those petroglyphs were cool. There's a whole thing there.
I don't want to get off topic. Okay, go.
There's too many directions to go with that stuff. Yeah. So the St. Patrick thing, like what's he know? Like he's known for driving the snakes out of Ireland, right? Mm-hmm. Well, hold up, Mike.
Sure. I didn't know that about him, but now I do.
So that's his whole thing. His whole thing, like St. Patrick's Day is because this dude drove the snakes out of Ireland.
Huh. Dude, I'm just trying to think of that from like a subconscious standpoint. The symbolic meaning behind driving snakes out of Ireland and like what's, you know, like Ireland's a place of like trauma, man, and like shit. And yeah.
Mike, you're already way ahead of me because I've known that since I was like in fifth grade. You know, they teach you like, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day and here's what that is. And I've been like, oh, he drove the snakes out of Ireland. Never questioned it, never thought about it.
Yeah.
Well, like post Ice Age, Ireland has never had snakes. Ireland's a goddamn island. It's never had snakes. Never. There's no fossil record of snakes. So the rabbit hole I went down was talking about this guy bringing Catholicism to Ireland and driving out the Druids and the Celts and the pagans. Oh, and those are the snakes that he drove out. And then as you start digging into that whole ball of wax, it's like there's stories about him doing like St. Patrick doing a 40-day fast and this pagan like chieftain coming to him and trying to like, you know, bribe him to leave the island with like, oh, I'll give you my finest bull. And this pagan chieftain thought that the bull would run St. Patrick off, but the bull submitted to St. Patrick and allowed himself to be eaten by St. Patrick. And then the chieftain comes back and he's like, hey, where's my fucking bull? And St. Patrick's like, oh, hold up. And he puts the bull's hide and bones together and brings the bull back to life and gives him back to the chieftain. There's another story about... Oh yeah, dude. Like there is such crazy shit about St. Patrick out there. Like,
dude, this thing about like maybe chasing off all the, you know, pagans and druids and shit. That's interesting.
Yeah. He brought Catholicism to Ireland. Like the clover, like the, what do you call it?
The four leaf clover.
Well, not the four leaf clover. Cause typical clover is three leaf, right?
Yeah.
So I guess this dude used to use the clover as his like teaching mechanism to teach people about the Holy Trinity, because at the time the Celts and Druids and pagans really loved, I mean, they were polytheistic and they really loved their gods to come in threes. And so he was using, like the reason the clover is considered this like sacred thing is because it's typically a three leafed thing that is one thing that represents like the godhood, but also he used it to transition them from their pagan beliefs about like how gods cook, like how gods work and stuff like that. Like there is like when you're tied when, so when you ask me about like, is he just tied up with leprechauns? I'm like, oh Mike, there's so much crazy shit about St. Patrick that you got to get out. I don't know why we're talking about this other than it leads me to want to talk about that documentary that we were talking about.
Well, get into it because I want to tie it into it.
Well, the reason I'm saying it ties into it is because there's this like narrative that we all know and can have opinions about and can like decide who we are and what side of a thing that we're on. But even the concept of that narrative and trying to come up with opinions is the wool being pulled over our eyes. Like, you know, like there's cliches about like history is written by the victors, you know, stuff like that. Well, shit, dude, we're living history right now. Like this documentary that we watched was about the events leading up to January 6th riots at the Capitol. And we lived it. And there's all this misinformation and who everybody's on a side and everybody has all this kind of stuff and no one's right and everyone's wrong and it's all bullshit. And so now we're sitting here trying to go like, oh, we know what happened 1700 years ago and have an opinion about it. We don't even fucking know what happened. We don't even know the truth about what happened today, yesterday.
No, and that's the fascinating thing about that documentary. And what struck me so deeply was that you see all of the different storylines going on and you could drop into any of them and be like, oh, damn, this story is quote unquote true. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in that paradigm of their story. It's like it's true in that paradigm.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you go to the next one and that's true. And it's like you shift and like, and you see everyone like wrapped up in this story and even consumed, I would say, not just wrapped up, people consumed by these different narratives that feel so true, but it's because it's like complete to itself, but only like a fragment of the whole constellation of stories about that event.
Yeah, dude, you're nailing it. Like the documentary is called This Place Rules. It's available on HBO Max.
Discount code in the show notes for HBO Max.
Yeah, again, I'm not trying
use
to
it, give, use it while you Theragun yourself. And
yeah, please visit www.theragun.com/Mormons on Mushrooms. Or please, yeah, there's nothing's going to happen. But I love that you're talking about how everyone's narrative is not only it's true for them. It's true to them. It's how they live their life. Like they live their life based around this truth. They make it their identity. And it for me watching it, I don't care. Like it's like over here on the left, these people are saying this, this, and this, and it's nuts. Over here on the right, these people are saying this, 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 and it's nuts. And everyone's wrong, but what it made me think of is,
well, everyone's right in a certain way, but like not, they're so zoomed in on their rightness that they end up being wrong, I guess, in a way.
You know? Oh, I think I said everyone's wrong. Did I say everyone's right? I meant to say
you said everyone's wrong. And then I was like, well, maybe everyone's kind of right, but not, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's like
the concept of who's right and who's wrong. That's the other part that I get into it. It's like, based on what, like, do you know what I mean? Like if you say, okay, well, what's 2 + 2 and someone goes 5, it's like, well, no, you're wrong. Yeah. But if you say, you know, and you say 4, well, you're right. But if you say what, you know, how does the world work? Who's in charge? Who, like, where are the, who's a pedophile and who's a fucking, you know, lizard person that's ruling the Vatican through royal bloodline. Like, I mean, they talk about this shit in this documentary.
Uh-huh.
And they all believe it. And it made me think about being raised Mormon. It made me think about, some of the esoteric shit that I'm into right now and how I can get a little bit up my own ass about that as far as like, okay, this is the way to do it now. And this is how it is just like, no, nothing. It's all wrong. I don't know how to say this good, Mike.
I'm going to tie it a little bit back to St. Patrick and this polytheistic versus monotheistic.
Yes, thing. Please. Yes.
When you have a monotheistic consciousness, there has to be like a right or a wrong. One of those storylines has to be true. There has to be a true storyline throughout that. But what polytheistic consciousness can teach you is that like, no, if we're all acting out like in this grand drama of the gods, the grand play of the gods,
yeah.
Like, is it who's right? Or are we all wrapped up in the drama of it all? And like, and so consumed by there has to be a straight and narrow path to God, or a straight and narrow path to the truth. And that truth has to, there has to be a truth, but I think that's how we've been conditioned by monotheistic religions or monotheistic psychology that like manifest as religions. When, if you look at it as like a polytheistic, like smorgasbord of storylines and heroes and villains and all of it.
Yeah.
And that's what you kind of do. You watch this whole stew of all of it. And then you see the people above all of it pulling the strings. Like there's that guy of the
The Proud Boys guy.
The Proud Boys guy?
Yeah.
Is that bad to say or what?
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Is what I was saying.
Oh no, you said Proud Boys. You got Proud Boys. No, we call him that. How he joined, but really he's more interested in the t-shirt sales and everything. And then there's that rapper who was never he became.
Oh, dude, yeah.
He's like done like a Let's Go Brandon like rap video, and he's like, well, I was never like on the right. I was never right wing until when I did shift to the right wing, like my followers quadrupled or whatever. They've been escalating ever since. And so he's like, damn, if I rap about the stuff I rap about before, no one listens. But now if I do one about Let's Go Brandon, I have a huge hit and everyone loves me. And well, not everyone loves me, but enough people love me that I'm making tons of money.
I got money, fame, and influence. Like that's what he was wanting. When he was writing his raps before, you know, whatever it was, let's go, Brandon. It cracks me up, by the way. It's just such a funny thing. Like I like the idea of a Mormon dad, like chanting, "Let's go, Brandon." Do you know what I mean? Because it's that same thing about like, look, homie, if you're gonna say frick or gosh darn, like you're putting the responsibility to think fuck and goddamn into my brain. Like now I've got to say fuck you or fuck Joe Biden. Like if somebody says let's go Brandon because they would never say fuck Joe Biden, I'm like, you know, I know what that means, so now I got to think, now I got to do the translation in my head, you know. They're like, let's go Brandon. I'm like, you mean fuck Joe Biden.
And it's just like aggressive way of saying fuck Joe Biden.
Dude, I think it's funny. Kudos. I got nothing to say about it.
I know, are we giving kudos? Like, yeah. But
well, I'm not saying kudos like yay Biden or yay whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like, let's go Brandon. It's kind of funny. Cracks me up a little bit.
And I think something that surprised me about that too, the documentary, is because I'm very left in my politics.
Yeah.
You know, I both like socially and fiscally, I guess, is that the way you kind of say it? I lean very left. And so... Yeah. To see also the narratives on the left and the people benefiting off those narratives, I was like, oh, damn, I can't just be. It's not like a gotcha documentary where it's like the left can just watch it and just be like, oh, yeah, they're so crazy on that side. No, it exposes dude, I get wrapped up in this shit, too, all the time. I always get wrapped up in it.
See, I like that. I like the shit that like points a finger at me and says, dude, you're full of shit. Like, I love that. I loved that about that thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I want to be in the great and spacious building, pointing my fingers and being like, you dipshits. Ha ha ha. Gotcha. That's what I want. I think that on a like real basic, like know-it-all sack of shit level. I really want to do that. But every time I get up on my high horse to do that, I get knocked down of like, oh, dude, you're doing the same exact – you are getting bamboozled by maybe the exact same people that are pulling the strings to that you think everybody else is getting bamboozled by. Right?
Oh, Doug just switched sides, guys. But, you know, like still pulling the strings. But now Doug's left the straight and narrow path, and now he's in the great and spacious building, and now he's making fun of the people who are – like not, you know, like so clinging to Mormonism or something. And then, oh wait, no, Doug is currently in the midst of darkness, like the dark night of the soul. Like, but someone's up there like cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. It's like, he's just like cycle through all the roles.
Dude, you're speaking to my heart right now, because what happens is, like, jokes aside, I am still quite a raging liberal, bleeding heart, hippie, you know, pansy. But I sure have been spending the last few years developing a lot of, non-political, like, version of my existence, you know, and just love and just kind of love for people. And sometimes, so that's where it gets to me a little bit, right? There is this question comes up of, okay, I can be a little, not even neutral. I can be a little less removed, or a little further removed, you know, but at what point, I guess the whole point of this conversation for me is, at what point do I be vocal? At what point do I take action? Do you know what I mean? Because like we come in here and talk maybe about the church, and we love the people, we love the members, we think that sometimes the institution of the church paves the way for the existence of abuse and bigotry and prejudice and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it becomes that real philosophical question for me of like, okay, when does someone like me speak up in the world, or worse, take action?
Yeah.
How do you make that decision? Because we're back to that right and wrong thing. What? Who's to say? I could be totally full of shit. I probably am. Usually,
it could be, but I mean, it's like that, and that's where it gets hard. And I feel the same way, because, you know, if we talk about some of the issues, like, let's just even say, I mean, do we even go there? But I think we should, like abortion rights.
Yeah.
I'm very passionate that women should have sovereignty over their own bodies.
Yeah.
You know, and I am willing to take action on that and fight for it, to argue on its behalf, to really push for it. And I don't think what we're talking about is like this relativism where it's like, well, nothing matters kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think if it like you should be passionately engaged with life. And maybe even this helps you deepen into it more in a way, but I get that like dilemma of when do you, am I getting caught up in this narrative of us versus them? And now I'm screaming at conservatives for their stance. But they're not hearing me. I'm not hearing them. And now I'm locked in this thing. And we hear that cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching up above, you know?
Yeah.
Or am I fighting for something I believe in? And it gets tricky.
Gosh, I'm kind of glad that you brought up abortion as an item of discussion, because, you know, for me, you I think that you said it in a way that, you know, I completely agree with, which is you passionately stand for women having sovereignty, like that they have autonomy over their own bodies.
Yeah.
Again, it's not I don't feel like I have an opinion about a person getting an abortion, because it's not my body or life or decision to make. So why would I have a fucking opinion? Like, why would I? So I, you know, it's couched in this way to talk about, like, you know, we talk about like pro-life or pro-choice. I think that that's misleading. Do you know what I mean?
I think so too. Yeah.
It's like, do you think that a woman has a right to make a decision about her own body? Or do you think you, Doug, should help out with that decision. Like, dude, like it's such an interesting.
Yeah, but I get it. It gets passionate.
Abortion sounds tough. Sounds really tough.
And, you know, because I've also been on the other side before, you know, when I was Mormon and even, you know, I guess I became liberal before I left the church. So, but when I was like really Mormon, I was really, you know, I felt like I would say abortion's murder. And yeah. I'm not taking a moral stance on murder. Murder's murder. And I really believe that to my core. And, you know, you can just get wrapped up in this so easily.
Yeah.
But I guess here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Cause we talk about, but I think this is where it is. Cause the both sides shout at each other. Right. And no one's really listening. Right. And so you get caught. And so I think that's what the cha-ching thing up above is the people pulling the strings. They don't care what the issue is. As long as people are screaming at each other on both ends, they win.
Yeah. They make their money.
But if you think about it, if we think about like abortion, if you took a poll of the nation and said, how many people want more abortions to happen?
Dude, yeah.
What do you think the percentage would be? I'd hope it'd be super low, but.
What'd you say?
I'd hope it'd be super low. I hope it'd be like almost less than a percent. Well,
it's an impossible. That's why I'm struggling to answer the question because the way you worded it, I think, is perfect. It's like you're asking the question. You're on you're man on the street kind of thing, right? You're going up and polling people and you're saying, do you want more abortions to happen? Well, first of all, that's already an impossible question because I do not have the equipment to have an abortion. And so therefore I'm like, I don't know. What are the circumstances? Like it's an impossible question to answer.
That's true. You know what I mean? And we're two white dudes talking about this.
I'm a white man talking about like, do I want an increase in women having like autonomy over their own bodies? Yes, I do. Do I want an increase in abortions? I have no idea. I don't know what that could even possibly mean. So it's an impossible question. I like the way you word that question.
I guess my reason for asking it is in the sense of like, I think it gets back to sometimes the thing of like, there's still more that unites us than divides us.
Yeah, dude.
You know, and it's like, okay, we both want to, preserve human life, but also preserve a ton, you know, it's like but how could we have different opinions on how we get to that?
Yeah.
Can we keep it on that instead of calling one side like dictators and one side baby killers and the rhetoric that keeps us divided when, I'm going back to this example we talked about early on where I'm saying, I'm talking to my family more this week because death seems to do that where it's like, it splashes cold water in everyone's face where it's like, holy shit, why have we been fighting? Or what have we been arguing? Or why have I not been reaching out to my siblings? And even though, you know, most of my siblings are still Mormon, this week is again, just a reminder of like, holy shit, there's so much more that connects us than divides us. And we get so caught up in this dichotomy of like, you know, right versus left, ex-Mormon, Mormon, that like, instead of just like, I don't know, but it's a fucking stew. It's a mess, man.
I've started thinking about, well, actually this is fairly new to me. I started thinking about it in terms of instead of right versus left, red versus blue, black versus white, whatever those like, you know, dichotomies, we've used the example of like team sports before, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
As far as like, what's the color of the jersey that you're cheering for. I've started looking at it like Coke versus Pepsi, where I don't think most people can tell the fucking difference between Coke and Pepsi. I know I can't tell the difference. And I know they do taste tests all the time. And people can't tell the difference between Coke and Pepsi.
Sometimes Coke and Pepsi can actually get a little heated, so we might want to use a different example.
Coke and Pepsi's heated? Well,
I think some people would be like, go to a restaurant and be like, oh, can I have a Coke? Oh, we only have Pepsi. Like, I'll have a water. You're right. I think there's a lot of people there.
Dude, you're right. I'm not one. So I think of, and for me, for my terms of how I want to look at the political or religious sort of like landscape.
What about, could we say Sprite versus 7-Up?
Versus 7-Up. Yeah. Perf. I don't think people have as much of a like attachment, but actually I want to use Coke versus Pepsi because I recognize, because the analogy is perfect for me, because I can't tell the difference between Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah.
And I know that there are people who have strong opinions about that. They can tell the difference between Coke and Pepsi and have really, really strong, like, no, it's all Coke all the time around our, we're a Coke family. We put Coke on our bumper sticker. Like, we are a Coke family. And there's people who are like, no, choice of a new generation. We're Pepsi. Like, we do all the Pepsi thing. Like, I want to view the world the same way I view the Coke and Pepsi thing, which is like, oh, these people have a preference, I guess. But also, I can't quite tell the difference. Now, if someone starts going around waterboarding people with Coke or Pepsi, I give a shit. And I'm going to be like, can we not torture people with Coke and Pepsi? You know, if people start like, trying to drown children in Coke and Pepsi, or if people try to start like, you know, opening up a vein and shooting up, you know, shooting pure, Pepsi Cola into their veins, I'll be like, I have an opinion about that. But that's the analogy. It works for me as a way of literally saying, oh, I recognize that other people are really riled up about it, but I could not. If I go to a restaurant and I'm like, I want a rum and I say rum and diet, because I really don't give a shit if they give me Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi, Diet RC Cola,
Diet Fresca.
Frankly, they can give me Diet Root Beer and I probably don't even notice.
But you're really hoping for a Diet Fresca, aren't you?
But I want that because I don't want the sugar, you know? I got enough sugar in the rum.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to someone who was raised in a Coke family where, like, we had Coke signs in our house and Coke blankets and Coke machine. We had a Coke machine.
Oh, yeah, dude. I recognize. Like, listen, I'm married to a Coke fiend. Like, I am. Coke fiend sounds funny, huh?
I like it.
I'm married to a Diet Coke sommelier who really can tell the difference between, like, every possible version of Diet Coke.
Pepsi, McDonald's Pepsi's Coke. Too oaky. Pepsi's too like, yeah, oaky with notes of cherry and.
Yeah, we're literally talking about Coke and Pepsi right now. Hey, we're back. It's time to talk Coke and Pepsi, baby.
I mean, actually, I'm more of a Dr. Pepper guy. Well, when I drink soda, I don't really drink it anymore unless you put some rum in it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'll admit to every once in a while, dude, I'll grab a Maverick and just crush a 44 ounce diet. I have to admit, usually Diet Coke, but if the Diet Coke's out, I just go to Diet Pepsi and I'm like, habit. Coke's made me, my spouse has made me a habitual, Diet Coke is my choice, but I also don't care. What is this conversation?
That contract. I love that analogy because it's like, if you're not caught up in it, it's easy to see. It's like, guys, what are we fighting about?
Right.
You know,
that's the point I'm trying to make.
And then as soon as you get locked in that complex, you've become the other side of that complex. You know, it's like, it's what, you know, and I think maybe we were chatting about this. We were chatting about this as we were talking about the show actually that we watched, the movie.
The show again is This Place Rules, documentary found on HBO. Call your local cable provider and see how available HBO Max is in your area. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
You love cable providers anymore, though, man.
I know. I didn't. I fucked it up.
Like your discount code to go to the web and sign up for HBO Max. is this as soon as you allow – so I'll give it an example. And I felt this with like when I first left the church, I would get in a lot of conversations. And I still get wrapped up in it sometime. I'm not perfect. I like to get into it. But I was saying I get caught up in this from time to time, and especially when I first left the church.
Yeah,
was when as soon as someone, if there were the people who asked me why I left, very few, but sometimes people would ask me why I left, and they were very curious.
Mm.
And when they were curious, it was a great conversation. If they ask me or approach the subject of the church with an intent to change my mind, or if I did the same to them, now we've just pitted each other against each other, and we've become we're locked in the complex. We've become two sides of the same complex. And those discussions never went well. They always, it was like hurt feelings or something. And I could feel, it's like, I hated those conversations because it's like, I could see myself through their eyes and I didn't like it. Like I knew, it's like, I could feel how they were feeling about me because I've been in their shoes and talked to people and like, oh, Mike just, you know, lost his way and this. And I could almost feel that. Like I could feel me being a projection of them. Meanwhile, they're also a projection of me. Like we get locked in this gridlock. But when people ask me with curiosity, it's like, then it's like the conversation flowed, you know?
Yeah. I've never really thought about it that way, but you're touching on something that's like even maybe a thing that I haven't known how to admit to myself until you just said it. Where it's that thing where you come away, you know, if it's like that argumentative kind of version of it, or if it's like a, you know, trying to prove each other right or wrong kind of deal when it comes to like conversations about church. I mean, really for me, church, politics, anything, it's where I, instead of it being like this fun, open kind of like sharing of ideas conversation, like the curiosity thing that you're talking about, if it's contentious, I also feel like I don't buy my point, like my point of view. I'm like, oh, I sound dumb. Like I sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. And
all of a sudden all these great points I was going to make just land flat. And
Right. It sounds like, and so suddenly I start sounding like I'm being a little bit like just, you know, ragging on the church for, as an example, you know, and just like kind of nitpicking and cherry picking things. Whereas
and I sound more bitter than I thought I felt.
Than I am. Yeah, exactly. And then, but it's different when it's like, and this happens with like my friends that are like strong, stalwart members of the church. And it happens with my friends who are not, where if it's just like, we're all just kind of talking and sharing ideas and being like open to each other. I can think of a guy that I have this conversation with frequently where it's like, dude, I respect what you're up to. I can tell that you respect what I'm up to, and let's just like share each other's kind of like energy and ideas. And he and I've never felt I've never felt judgmental of his thing with the church, and I've never felt judged by him, and I've never felt like I was trying to make points just to get like a slam dunk, like to get like a, oh, maybe this will get him thinking and away from the church. I'm still having a hard time putting into words, but you just unlocked something in me where it's like, oh yeah, that really does happen a lot to me.
It's such a different vibe, right? I remember being at an event with a bunch of, it's actually the event that sent me to therapy because I was in such a funk afterwards. I was just at this retreat with a bunch of friends from high school who were still Mormon. And, you know, they asked me a lot of questions. And, you know, I'm not saying they were insincere because there were a couple of good, really good conversations, really sincere conversations during that weekend. But there were others where I found myself, you know, I was the only one drinking. I was the only one. I just felt like awful. And I would try to make a point or try to explain something. Yeah. And I would just feel like I was this dirty apostate. No matter how it came out, I couldn't make it come out better. It was weird.
That's a real experience. I'm so grateful to you right now for sort of like giving voice to that. Cause I've had that experience a number of times and maybe haven't had a way of wording it or just feel it. Just that I just know like to recognize when it feels kind of gross, like, ugh. Why did I even open my mouth? Why did I, you know, and you start even like feeling kind of like angry. I feel angry at myself, but I also feel angry at the person I was talking about, you know, like, Like I got to like, you know, it's the old cliche of like, then I got to go win the argument in the shower, you know, when I have it in my head, you know, it's like, oh, I should have said this, this and this, you know, that yeah. type of thing. It's like, no, who fucking cares? I don't need that. I don't want that. I literally don't want that. I don't want to go around being a, I told you so, I gotcha, you're all dumb and I'm smart. I don't want to be that person at all. And so why am I getting in the shower and winning arguments against those people? You know what I mean?
Because you know what? They're doing the same thing. They're in the shower winning an argument against you too. And so the next time you guys meet, you guys are going to have all these arguments that you've won and you're going to try to use all those points and it's just going to fall in. No one's listening. No one's, you know?
Yeah, dude. Instead of both of us separately being in the shower, winning an argument against each other, we should be in the shower together, jerking each other off and not worrying about the argument. That's what should be going on.
Right. If we just had more shower jerk off sessions together, that's like,
yeah, man. Like then I'd masturbation's like a lot more fun when you got a co-pilot.
say that again.
That was a great one.
We both said things at the same time.
Oh, what did you say? I said, okay. What did you say?
Well, I didn't hear what you said, so I want you to repeat it.
Well, same. I just asked you that same question. I didn't hear what you said.
I started singing, I'd like to buy the world a Coke.
I said, masturbation is a lot more fun when you have a co-pilot, which I think is pretty fucking good.
A co-pilot who can send you to hyperdrive, you know?
Yeah, dude, like you're still in control. Like you're still the one that's like got the yoke and you're controlling the ship. But man, once in a while you might need to rely on your co-pilot.
Every once in a while I say, hit it, Chewy. You know what to do.
And by the way, I am... Oh, damn it, dude. It was going to be kind of funny because I was going to make a Chewbacca noise. Like, that's what I want to hear from my co-pilot. And I was going to try the Chewbacca noise, but I can't make a Chewbacca noise. Like, I wish either. I could, but I can't.
We used to do this thing as teenagers where we'd dare each other to go and knock on someone's door. And then when they would answer, just like make Chewbacca noises for as long as we can.
Really? I never heard of that version of Ding Dong Ditch.
Yeah, it was a... I don't know what we were trying to accomplish. We were just making fools of ourselves. And we were completely sober. We were Mormon boys knocking the door. And I can't do it, Chewbacca. I'm not even going to attempt to do it. It's like, it was horrible. But I just have to be there. And it was usually like with these, I don't know. But it wasn't like random people. It was like people. I don't know what we would do. What we would do weird things.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, you know, every once in a while, like there'll be an opportunity for someone to, this is such a stupid conversation, but there will be an opportunity for you to make a Chewbacca noise, you know? And like having a friend, like having a homie who can make a good Chewbacca noise is never a bad idea. And I can't name this guy's name, but I got a friend who does a really good Chewbacca and I'm always so fucking jealous. Like, I feel like he's the star. Like, I feel like he's the lead singer of my favorite band when he like times that Chewbacca noise. It's like, God damn it, dude. I wish I could do that.
Next time we're on stage for Mormon Palooza, could he come and we could just like cue him up every once in a while?
For sure he would do it. Yeah. I'd be like, dude, I just need you to hang out in the rafter, like in the wings. Off, you can come on stage, you can stand in the, whatever. But when I like, when the moment strikes, like he and I have good mind meld, he'll make the best fucking Chewbacca. Chewbacca growl? I keep saying Chewbacca noise, but
I think it's a growl most of the time.
I mean definitely he's communicating his language.
Yeah.
Like Han can understand it.
Yeah. And I would call it a growl. I think growl is good.
It's more fitting.
We solved like, that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how we get. Oh, because we were talking about co-pilots in the shower.
One other thing about like the complex stuff, you know, we talk about, you're not getting wrapped up in it, but we all know we're going to get wrapped up in it again.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
for sure.
We like to. I mean, we're not fucking monks like meditating on a temple. You know, we're going to get caught up in it again. And I think.
Have to. Yeah.
I also think we need to allow ourselves to be caught up in it, and that's okay. And you get caught up in it, and then you have these moments of recognition being like, damn, that didn't work, or like got caught up in it again, you know, but we're going to, You know, I even talk about this splash of cold water that death brings. And I hope I don't get caught up in, you know, not talking to my siblings as much. But I know I'm going to get caught up in something, you know? And even when I talk about like with the church, you know, we talk about how I do think, let me talk about one more thing with this death thing with, you know, if we really saw the archetypal complexes or these burdens, these ancestral burdens that people are carrying, we would be so much more kinder. And we do, we have those moments where we like see each other and we're like, oh, I see you and you see me. And we're like, oh, I see that person. And then we go, and then we forget about it. We get wrapped up in the stream again. And you know, the same thing, I think the church is swimming in these same waters that we are. And it's not the cause of things, but it's perpetuating trauma. But you know, and I know like if general conference, some general authority says something, you know, about LGBTQ people, I'm gonna get fired up again and get wrapped up in it.
Yep.
But then there's also the thing that like, who's benefiting by my anger at the church? Maybe some people may, I don't know. That's like,
well, that's a great question. I would like, I think that question is, in the same family of the question of like, well, when speak up, when action, it's not the same question. It's maybe, a balancing question, but I like the question of who benefits from you getting riled up at the church. I like that question as like a philosophical, like, okay, think about that.
I do like that because if it's like, no, I'm protecting, like if one right. LGBTQ person hears that, hears my anger and feels defended, feels vindicated, feels protected, then that's, I'll get caught up in that all the time. Now, if it's me just trying to win an argument that I had with someone in the shower or like in the shower, then maybe I'm too caught up in it. Maybe.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. This goddamn dude, I wrapped in kind of what I think is like a fun, silly conversation. There have been a few things that you've said tonight that have me like, I don't have an answer to it. Like, I like to think, I got to think about, you know? Mm-hmm. I really like the thing where you kind of put voice to that, like that icky feeling after having a conversation with a person that feels like you're just kind of spinning each other's wheels a little bit.
Yeah.
And I also like this concept, like this thought experiment, basically. I guess for me, it's just going to be a thought game of, okay, yeah, why speak up, when speak up, and like, does it matter? Like who benefit? Does anyone benefit? Like, is it, it could just be me. Like it might just be that I need to get something off my chest and that's fucking okay too.
That's you know? True too. I didn't think about that point is it could just be like, no, I need to get this out. I need people to hear what I have to say about this and my anger towards an institution or towards a political movement or towards, I need to be heard. To express and be heard, you know?
Yeah. Like maybe I just even need to hear myself say something out loud instead of my internal dialogue. I just need to hear it out loud. That's a valuable, you know, thing. Fucking nice word, Doug, but it's like a valuable thing, right?
It's a valuable thing, man.
And it's like, okay. Yes. Yeah. But are there times when I'm saying something to sound smart? Are there times when I'm saying something just to like play devil's advocate or worse, hide my sincerity behind claiming I'm playing devil's advocate, which is the thing I think I do as well.
Oh, damn. That one hit me.
You know what I mean? You ever? I became aware. I did that recently, and I was like, oh shit! I'm trying to be cool is what I'm trying to do. Like, oh, if you're like, oh, let me just play devil's advocate here and ask this question as if I'm like really thinking it through on both sides of an issue and like thinking, you know, looking at it from everybody else's perspective when I'm totally full of it, man. I have an opinion. I'm speaking that opinion to the person and then saying, oh, but I'm just playing devil's advocate. So you can say something and try to change my mind, but you're not going to. Ha ha ha, got you. Like I think about that a lot.
Or even trying to, when I like take the higher road and be like, you know what, the right and the left are fighting and
yeah,
they're locked in this thing. And like, it's two sides, two wings of the same turkey kind of thing. And like, yeah. I've got it figured out kind of stuff. Like it's also a way of like, I don't know what the right word is for it, but it's also an interesting story, I guess, and fantasy that I'm living.
Well, yeah, man. I mean, we're not going to, I mean, geez, we can't put so much pressure on ourselves to try to get it all solved here tonight, you know, but it does make me want to learn a new language. I'm referencing that book that you and I read called Finding Your Wild Twin Courting Your Wild Twin.
Ooh, that's even a better title. Oh.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, it's kind of almost like a throwaway, but he's talking about relationships. He talks about communication in a relationship you have to have a third, like each person has their form of communication, their style of communication. And he talks about the need to develop a third method of communication that acts as the blue tail feather on the magpie, right? That brings that together. And I don't even think he meant for that to be so impactful, but I can't get that out of my mind of just like, I really want to learn to speak not just Mike's language when I'm talking to Mike, not just my wife's language when I'm talking to my wife, not just my language when I'm trying to be heard. I want to learn to speak a third language that shares that common ground. Even this could sound totally condescending or like hubris. I don't mean
I don't think it does though. There's a different feeling to it when you're talking about it, man. Like,
yeah,
it feels different than because you're, I mean, it's interesting that even brings up the whole thing of like holding the tension of the opposites. That's where the third way emerges.
Yes.
And right now, today, we've been talking a lot of tension of opposites, right? Whether
we really have, yeah.
Coke versus Pepsi or Mormon versus non-Mormon, right versus left. There's a
great taste, left feeling.
What's the? You said that I was. Never mind.
No, what?
Do you remember those Bud Bowls, man? Those were the Bud Bowls.
Yeah. Oh shit! I forgot about those, dude. What happened to those? They got to bring those back.
I know, but then you bring back how they used to have it with like the claymation.
The bottles, like, the claymation bottles?
Yeah, and I don't want no CGI shit. I want claymation bottles doing their thing, you know?
Same.
And that less filling tastes great.
You were in the middle of a point, dude. I'm sorry. I don't.
It was perfect. Just that. And if you watch this documentary, which you should, you'll feel that tension. It's like this, you know, we're all in this tension. And I think there's something about holding both of those and allowing for that third way that can be beneficial, you know?
Yeah. And we probably should be honest. Like if you're listening and if you lean MAGA, like if you lean a little bit, Make America Great Again, even though Mike and I are saying like, it really pulls the curtain back and exposes everyone. It does. It probably could be triggering if you lean, Trump, because it probably makes fun of Trump supporters more than it makes fun of Trump detractors.
That's a very good point.
That's a fair thing to say.
Probably almost like 80, 20 or 70.
Yeah. And so it's probably like, if you'll probably hate it if you lean MAGA, and that's okay. Don't watch it. You won't like it maybe, but it does. If you're kind of either liberal or somewhere in between and kind of like it does poke fun at everybody. It's like South Park. It pokes fun at everybody.
And you know what? Even if you lean MAGA, like everyone can do a little poking every now and then, I guess.
Dude, I love it. I love the way we do that. So I was really trying just now to just be like, look, man, I'm not trying to get anybody riled up. and you're like, you know what? Fuck it. Get riled up a little bit. Like, get a little riled up. I like that.
Just feel the poke and see what comes out in you, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Just we're trying to
do. Did you say feel the poke when it comes out? Like,
you know, Pillsbury Doughboy when they poke him and he like giggles. And, yeah. I don't know why that image came up, but we're trying to make all the pop culture references we can, or the products.
I honestly,
I guess we just want to sell shit and put it. We want to now be the ones who are like, cha-ching. We want to put all these links where we can sell Theraguns and HBO Max subscriptions and Pillsbury Doughboy stuff.
Coca-Cola, Pillsbury Doughboy.
Are we Team Coke or Pepsi?
What's that?
Are we Team Coke or Pepsi? I'm willing to switch sides to Pepsi if we sell shit, man.
Well, yeah, I think we both said that we have ties to the Coke, Big Coke.
We do, but what's going to make us more money?
That's the question. Oh, shit, dude, yeah. I'll bet. Listen, let's throw out a couple of like pro Pepsi things here. Let's play both sides, baby. Like, let's do it. Let's get those.
No, if you play both sides, you're going to lose. That's the thing. You got to pick a side and you got to mean it. You pretend to mean it. That's the thing. You know, that's how you make money. You pick a side, man, and you really lean in hard.
Man, our resolutions are on display for 2023. What?
I finally have my intention going into this weekend of like, oh, which
tell
side?
Me.
Well, Coke versus Pepsi. I'll let you know.
Oh, that's your intent. You're saying that's come to you as your intention. I thought you were having a thing of like, oh, Doug, I forgot to tell you. I want to tell you about my intention. Really?
No, my intention was just being in the muck, you know, and not trying to exploit the imaginal realm. But what if I exploit it just a little bit to get us some money?
Yeah. Our New Year's resolution is to just make this podcast a lot more heavy on the pop culture references and a lot of product placement, like a lot of really trying to sell people on some stuff, you know?
I think so, man.
You're not fully clean unless you're zestfully clean.